Hey, everybody, welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I am back again with Dom to talk about a double episode of Survivor. Dom, double episode. Are you double excited or half excited? I don't know how the math works on that for you.
I'm not quite sure either, but either way, I am actually excited to be here. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, too. It's a nice, cold winter Saturday here in Maine. Very exciting times to be alive, as always. Dumb. I don't even know what I'm talking about at the beginning of this podcast. I can't. Let's just get into.
Let me say right off the bat, I was prepared coming in to have to count out to you to say, look, I get it, okay? Survivor editors, Colin, everyone else, it's Devon, all right? You've made your point. You don't have to rub it in. I know you would anyway, but you don't have to if you don't want to. And yet, I come here and I find that apparently all the Devon people are now off the train for some reason, that everyone's getting off that bandwagon. So I don't know what's going on. So I'm excited to find out exactly what the reasoning is.
All right. Well, yeah, we will definitely do that today. But let's not put the cart, or let's not put the bandwagon before the horse here as we dive into all of the latest action here. Dom, how are you doing? How's England?
I don't know if it's colder than Maine, but it's certainly cold. Like, it's no joke over here. It's pretty freezing, but we're doing okay.
Okay,
I'm responding to it as I respond to most things by just staying indoors all day and not going outside.
Yeah, I'm trying to kill time as I try to come up with, do we have anything to plug or get into before we just dive into this episode? It feels weird to not have some random tangent to go on, but I don't really have anything before we get going.
Yeah, not yet. However, hopefully lots of new and exciting content of some kind coming in the next few weeks. We will get back on the train, and the BB7 rewatch, which seems to be in a state of limbo, will resume again shortly. You have our word on that.
Yeah. It just feels weird. I don't even care about how England is. It just feels weird to be diving into the actual relevant content within 2 minutes of an episode starting.
And I know you don't care about how I am either, but yeah, we have to go through emotions so that there's a sense of familiarity about it.
All right, well, let's do it. Dom, let's get into this double episode. I think we are officially counting it as two episodes, by the way. I think next week will be episode 12. I heard it decreed by Dalton and Rob on Twitter.
I was going to say, has the stone tablet come down from Rob's apartment yet?
I believe before the episode even aired, I saw on Twitter, Dalton Ross and Rob Cesternino just clarifying ahead of time for everyone that next week will be episode 12. So this is technically two episodes, even though it does weave into, you know, one weaves right into the other one. This may be, out of all of the unworthwhile debates that the Survivor community gets into, the episode count debate might be the least worthwhile out of all of them.
Oh, absolutely. This is a fight that someone needs to have at some point, but it will not be us and it will not be now. So we'll move on to hopefully more exciting things.
Yeah. Well, we had some questions, Dom, last week about why Mike ended up playing that idol. And right away, this episode starts with him explaining his rationale. And he said, first of all, I'm not going to be the idiot who goes home with an idol in his pocket. And at least, end quote. And by the way, as far as I can tell, I'm guessing that that is the primary consideration. But he also said he wanted to keep Joe around so that if people wanted to flip, they would be gaining two votes instead of gaining just one. And it does seem like that ended up working, at least in the short term, for Joe and Mike here. But I was wondering if you think that being viewed as a pair with Joe left in the game would be actually a more favorable situation than just being there by yourself.
Yeah, I was wondering that too. And if you want to be there as part of a pair, why not with Cole, who, even though he is a bigger threat on a lot of metrics, I guess, I think is easier to get along with. He's easier to accommodate as part of your plan. Like, if you're the leader of the other alliance, right, and you want to pull a Tony, you want to flip over for one vote, I think it's much easier to do that if you're working with someone who is more pliable and compliant and isn't going to have to dominate every single conversation and strategy discussion like Joe is. And the whole thing
that's interesting. That hadn't even crossed my mind, but that is interesting. I my guess would be, though, that he just felt better about working with Joe, because I think as far as which of them is going to, like, I don't think he cares. It's not a difference maker as far as both of them are going to get voted out before Mike does either way, regardless of which one he's with. So I think that is, I hadn't even crossed my mind that he might want to do it with Cole, but that is an interesting idea.
But that's weird in itself, though, right? Because it seemed like Mike and Cole got along pretty well beforehand. They were part of this tight healers group. And Mike has been on the wrong end of Joe himself. He knows what that feels like. So he knows how quickly this can go south. And he knows as well the Joe will do anything he can to sell Mike out if it comes down to that. For as much as they have this whole coconuts dynamic going on, and for as cute as that is and endearing as that is to some people, I'm pretty sure that if it came down to it, Joe would just toss Mike out as soon as he could if he had to.
That is a compelling counterpoint, but I do know, I think Mike said that he really wanted to keep Joe around because he views Joe as a good player. And that may have been the difference maker. Is Cole has been running around saying all these things ever since the early days on the Healers Beach that Mike didn't want out there spreading. Whereas Joe, while he is certainly more of a wild card, and I agree, much more likely to be a self-interested player if push comes to shove than Cole might be later on. I do think that Mike probably just felt like, okay, at least with Joe, I have an ally that I can bounce ideas off of and make moves with.
Yeah, that's a good argument. Although I think your first point was the right one. I think Mike should want to be there just by himself as a singleton, this free agent who can move around wherever he goes. And he said at the start, that quote you mentioned, I'm not going to be the idiot who goes home with an island in his pocket, which to me, it sounds like that applies to literally any tribal council you could go to, right? That's an argument for playing it the moment you find it. It's not an argument for whether or not you should play it here. And we saw Mike at Tribal conjure up this weird machismo to try and draw the votes to him, right? He knew that he wasn't going to be the original target or the most likely target, and so he had to go out of his way to draw votes to him to try and make his play more compelling. So I think he realized on some level that he didn't need to do that, that there was no real danger he was going to be in. To me, and I think this is selling Mike short, I'm sure he had a reason that made sense in his head, but when he was giving that confessional about why he had to do it, it felt like the guy who, you know, you're called on to give a presentation to the class and you know you just have nothing to say, so you're there just like frantically trying to come up with something on the fly, and
I have no idea what that's like, Dom. That's never been me. I've never been that person.
And Mike really gave that vibe to me. It's like, well, I'm giving a confessional here and they're probably going to use it, so I should say something, but I don't know what, so we'll say the first thing that comes to my head and see how it goes.
Right. And again, you brought it up, and I always want to be as clear as possible. Like, we understand that there are going to be we don't see nearly everything that goes on the show, and I'm sure Mike had his own reasons that we didn't get to see even the beginning of explained on the TV episode. But just on paper, based on what we have seen, I would say that if you're part of a group that is being pegonged, I have a really hard time drawing up a better situation than the one that Mike was in when he was there with both Joe and Cole, where they are both bigger targets than him. He has the idol in his pocket and he has like 6 or 7 days to just ingratiate himself with the others and get them to want to work with him. Once it gets down to that group, like, you want to be the last healer left there. I really don't think Mike would have been viewed as much of a threat. And then when he has that idol too, I understand that there are plenty of reasons to be worried going into just any tribal council, especially when you know you're on the outs and it could easily be you if people are more afraid that maybe Joe has an idol after seeing how that's gone for him in the past. But I really just can't look too far past that Mike, for someone in the blatant minority, really had what I would consider like the best possible situation he could have drawn up and kind of gave it away.
I could understand it more if, let's say, Joe or Cole won immunity and you were worried that the other one had the idol, and you think, well, maybe as a way to get around that, they're going to target me or split the votes or do something where I could get some kind of attention. But it seemed like, realistically, right, if it wasn't Joe, it was going to be Cole or vice versa. Mike's name was never going to enter the discussion at all. So yeah, it still doesn't really make sense to me. But I'm sure, though, after the events of this first episode or first half of the episode, not taking a stand on that, I think Mike thought his plan worked perfectly, right? Like, yeah, that's exactly what I imagined. Everything went according to plan. So clearly this was the right idea the whole time.
Right. Well, I think that, and this is, as we'll get to, like, we have this right at the beginning of the episode, Lauren's going to win our Baylor Wilson Memorial Foot Fetish Reward Challenge, where she stacks all the blocks with her feet and gets to go on a cheeseburger feast along with Devin, Ben, and Ashley. And this foursome comes up with this plan to get Joe and Mike to flip and then turn, you know, use Ben as a secret agent for the fallout from that to potentially turn things back around and keep everyone else in the dark. And it really does seem like early on they came up with this. And I'm going to put it out there now. Like, we're going to spend this whole episode essentially talking about more or less like this heist that this group pulled off on the rest of the people in the game. And I would have said that this is fancy play syndrome. Like, if I was just sitting there on the beach hearing them talking about this, like trying to have someone disguise their agenda in the form of Ben for 3 days to just to maintain cover in a spot where you're probably going to be in good shape anyway, it seems like potentially the juice may not be worth the squeeze there. But they really lock this plan in, and it seems like execute on it perfectly.
Yeah, before we get too far away from the main point here, Baylor Wilson is someone I wish we all talked about more. Definitely an underrated all-star candidate in my mind. But do we want to just dive into this whole heist thing now, or is there anything semi-important that we actually want to get to first?
Well, let's stay on the real topic at hand and the reason we podcast. Baylor Wilson, I assume you want back. Do you think that's just while we're on it? Because you're right, she doesn't come up enough. Could Baylor come back?
I don't think so anymore. Like, I don't know what the context would have to be for it. If it was second chances too, but before they've had enough new people that she would get pushed out of that spot. I don't know. It's unlikely, and that makes me sad because Baylor is... I don't want to say I liked Baylor necessarily, but I guess I was never as offended by her as literally everyone else seemed to be. And I enjoyed watching that her cause that effect on people.
Do you think she's more or less likely to come back than Missy?
I think that comes down to purely to demographics, right? Like, do they need someone to fill the older woman role, or do they need... I think it just comes down to age. And based on the way Survivor casting is going at the moment, that means there will be, like, one person over the age of 29 on whatever season this ends up being, season 38 or 40. And so Baylor probably has just a better statistical chance right out of the gates.
Okay. All right. Well, now that we've tackled the important issues of the week, let's get into the secondary issues, and that is this We'll stick with heist. Heist seems good with that this group comes up with. It reminds me, honestly, and this will not mean anything to people who don't watch Big Brother, but it's the same kind of idea behind why in real time I would have said, oh, no, Andy Heron, don't try to lie about your vote. Don't try to frame Alyssa, like that's too much. But in seeing him do it masterfully and get away with it, this is great stuff. Like, this is a really good plan if you can pull it off.
Well, so did they do this masterfully, and did they get away with it? And I guess the second question there is TBD still. But in terms of winning on that first vote, then yeah, they got what they wanted, I guess, even though I'm not quite sure why that is what they wanted. And we'll get into that in a second.
Well, I mean more specifically the idea of planting Ben in there with the other side for an entire round. That is what I'm saying I think might have been a little fancy, and what I think they executed really, really well on. And again, like, I think it's so hard to really stay in character in that kind of situation. And I have no reason to believe, based on what we've seen, that Ben didn't do a really good job. Now, maybe this is more of them making Ben look really good, which has been one of the themes of this season. But it seems like everyone that it was intended to kind of snow seemed to be pretty snowed by it.
Yeah, it definitely worked in that sense. Although my take, and I don't think this is even a hot take, I imagine we're going to agree on this, is I think this is a really bad thing long term for Ben. I think this is, I don't know how Devin managed to convince him to do it, to pull off something this fancy, but I think this is maybe going to set up the eventual fall of Ben if it comes to that.
Oh, interesting. Like, Devin said, hey, Ben, you be the guy who goes over there and gets their hopes up. Because we've certainly seen that. The person getting everyone's hopes up and not flipping ends up, people feel a lot worse about that than the person who never pretended they were going to vote with them in the first place.
Yeah, well, so I think Devin, for as much as he's saying this to everyone at the moment, I think he does want to turn on Ben at some point. And I think Devin seemed like he was the one who came up with this idea to have Ben be the double agent. I don't think the two things are connected. I don't think he's using this as like a long-term plan to set up Ben. But if he said in a confessional that that's what he was doing, it would make sense to me. Like, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Mm-hmm. No, I that definitely does make sense. What did you think about, as these four were coming together, they were very quick to, I guess it started over bonding over people being like, oh, Ryan has an idol. We should all be aware of that. And then Lauren volunteers that she has her advantage.
Let's step back quickly, because the way this group came together was in the reward. Lauren wins, capping off her amazing immunity and reward streak. Go Queen Lauren. But she gets to pick three people, which I think that is a very interesting number to have exactly 4 out of 9. Go at that spot, because you would think that's going to cause the other five to band together against them, when in reality those four people were able to solidify this plan which I guess ended up including Joe and Mike, kind of, but not really. But that really cemented the four of them. And you see this kind of often where, like, a group goes on a reward and the people on the outside try to weasel their way in. And there's usually some, like, agreement that everyone kind of knows is bullshit, but you have to hope is real. Right. But in this case, you had four people who it seemed like were all on the same page automatically. And so they had this time when no one could interrupt them or overhear them or anything to plan this heist, and it ended up working perfectly. But Lauren, she picks Ben. I don't think any of us watching were surprised by that. Do you think anyone in the game was surprised by that? I mean, do you imagine they see Lauren and Ben as this tight pair, or is it, well, I have to pick King Arthur because we're all terrified of him?
I would guess probably more in the latter. Like the answer for me would be, I don't think people had any reason to be alarmed by her picking Ben, if that's what you're getting at. Is that right? Feel like that's too obvious, or?
Well, no, I don't think picking Ben as one of the three is at all surprising, but do you think their thing is, oh, that's even more confirmation that the two of them are tight, or is it, well, anyone would have picked Ben because he's at the top of our alliance right now?
Okay, yeah, I'm saying the latter. I think it's Ben. Of course she's going to pick Ben.
Okay, so then she picks Devon, which I imagine seemed fairly innocuous to most of them. But then the thing that I think caused a few people's ears to perk up as they were watching was she picks Ashley. Now, you might think, okay, that's just, you have to pick someone else, so may as well pick Ashley. But then it seemed like Ashley was almost more enthusiastic than everyone else about this plan as it came together. And
crucially, by the way, as Jeff will point out, she doesn't even think about it before saying Ashley.
No, she was in immediately.
I
wonder if she had been having these kind of designs herself for a while now, but because we just never get to hear from Ashley, we never hear about them. And it's because I think many of us have been assuming the whole time, well, Ashley might still be tied with JP. At the very least, though, she's tied with Chrissy, surely. And so if she gets to the end, it's probably going to be like Chrissy, Ashley, and JP or some combination there. But instead, it seemed like, you know, Chrissy's name never really came up. And when the target went to JP, she was all about it. I mean, she was happy to jump on board there. So I wonder if in her absence, she thought the two of them have got so tight that there's no way that I'm going to be more than a third wheel. And if I'm the third wheel, it's because Chrissy probably thinks I'm not going to win. So I need to do something now. I also wonder if Joe taunting Ashley about being a goat might have struck a nerve somewhere. And she's now thinking, okay, I have to be part of a big move to have something on my resume when I get to the end.
It's definitely possible, but to kind of transition from this into what I was originally getting at, which is, you're right that it seemed like this was a very deliberate move by Lauren. And I think that not only Lauren had ideas that this would be a group of people she would want to work with, given how fast they all seem to get on the same page and be willing to divulge stuff, I think it's possible that this was something that was already in the works, and this was just their first opportunity to talk openly.
Yeah, definitely. Or maybe like three of them were in on it, and then this was a perfect time to bring in that crucial fourth person that you need.
Right, right. Yeah. So really, really strong stuff here as we start to see the beginning. I think they did really time the double episode well, and I wonder if it was deliberate, because isn't it usually the week before is the double episode? But this one really is a good two-parter where we get the beginning of this group of four. We get to see Ben go undercover in real time immediately after the vote, and then see how it all plays out that same night.
Yeah, I wonder how different the viewing experience is for all of this. If firstly, if these two episodes were separated, or if like the first one had been joined to last week, because then you have this interesting thing where like they're both very different in terms of the outcomes that you get. Yeah, I think it's usually you have the merge vote and then one more after that, and then you get the double. It's meant to, like, usually, why do they do this? It's because it clashes with something, right? So they have to like pack an extra episode in, or how does it work?
I always thought it was because I don't know why, if Thanksgiving is what causes it, but I always thought it was the Thanksgiving week was the double episode typically. Okay. Yeah, and so, this week it was the week after. So this season it was the week after.
Yeah. So in lieu of like having a recap episode or something, this is like the new standard or what?
I don't know why they. Who knows why they do anything for the doubles? I love though. Wasn't there a time where we weren't getting double episodes every season? Like, didn't this not start until like Blood versus Water or so?
You would know more about this than I would. Any like arcane Survivor trivia knowledge, you're the go-to guy for this, so I will defer to whatever your judgment happens to be.
Okay. Any Arcane Survivor trivia challenge, I was the go-to guy for in 2003. I am no longer the go-to guy for any Arcane Survivor trivia challenge. All right. So actually, before we move on with how this all continues, I want to ask, because you mentioned Lauren not only won this challenge, she won the immunity the previous week. Is Lauren a challenge beast? And could that potentially be a reason she gets voted out near the end?
Well, unironically, maybe. I don't know. I think at the moment, it's she's won, what, like 2 out of 6 or something? So I don't think it's like a dominant performance yet. But let's say she wins another immunity and then like finishes second in a close run contest down the line, people might start to notice that, and that could be a reason why, you know, if you're looking for someone to shift the target to, it could end up being Lauren.
Yeah, well, I wanted to talk just a little bit about Lauren and just the overwhelming support it seems like she's been getting from pretty much everyone, as far as I can tell, and I'm definitely on board with that, obviously, in a huge way. I'm hoping, Dom, that Survivor has something along the lines of like the casting on future seasons is potentially impacted by someone like Lauren being successful and popular, the same way that it certainly has been impacted by like Cochrane being successful and popular. We now have a tried and true Cochrane archetype, and now we're getting the David Wrights and like all these different kinds of people that they really didn't, frankly, put on the show too often, and then finally they have someone get on and be successful, and it really sets the wheels in motion for potentially a whole new different kind of casting profile. I'm wondering if there's potentially going to be to anyone who is familiar with poker will probably have heard the name Chris Moneymaker, and it's called the Moneymaker effect, where in 2003 ESPN started airing the World Series of Poker, and this random amateur ended up winning the whole thing, this guy literally named Chris Moneymaker, and from that point forward just every amateur at home was like, oh my god, that could be me, why am I not out there, and just crazy increase in popularity, and that's what started the whole poker boom. I'm wondering if Lauren Rimmer could be like the Chris Moneymaker for Survivor fans, having just everyday Americans back out there, because I feel like, and I was talking a little bit with you about this before we came on air, actually, Dom, I feel like Parvati, while she is obviously an amazing player, one of the best of all time, I wonder if having someone in that mold be so successful is what set them on that course from like season in the 20s and beyond, of putting just so many young, super attractive people out there and hoping that they're strategic players. I'm hoping that Lauren being successful could set us on a new kind of trajectory for that. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so first of all, Chris Moneymaker is literally history's best example of nominative determinism, of just what your name is determining what you do. And what that says about Lauren is unclear at this stage.
Oh, man.
But I certainly hope we get something in that vein, because I would love to see more people like Lauren, people who don't easily just get shoehorned into that traditional casting mold. I think where the comparison falls down, though, like with Parvati, for instance, is like you have all these people going out there wanting to be Parvati and thinking that they are Parvati and have that potential, and they kind of have those blinders on. Whereas I think there are a lot of people who like Lauren and maybe relate to her on some level, but they don't want to be Lauren. Maybe they want to do what she did. They want to win Survivor if that's what she ends up doing, or be the fan favorite, or be whatever. But I don't know if like they imagine themselves as her the way that it seemingly half of every female cast for the past 10 years wanted to do with Parvati.
No, totally. But I do think it's possible that seeing Lauren be successful will get more people thinking, oh, I could go out and do Survivor, but like more of the people. And I think there was some aspect of this with Ceri back in the day. People used to talk about like, oh, Ceri got some of these couch potatoes off the couch and onto Survivor. I'm hoping that Lauren being successful and being so popular will not only lead to people wanting to apply and give it a shot that might not have otherwise, but also CBS being more willing to take a shot on them.
Who do you think those people are, though? Because like when we look at Malcolm or Joe or Ozzy, the people who are their biggest fans, it isn't other guys who look and act like Malcolm or Joe or Ozzy. It's people who are different from them in every conceivable way, right? And I wonder if the same is true to a lesser extent with the Lauren fandom. I don't know if the people who like Lauren the most or relate to her the strongest are actually the people who are that much like her in any discernible way.
That's fair. I feel like Lauren, as I've said, just doing such a good job on this season, I think it can only help for the casting that CBS is going to be willing to do later. Because, and in particular, not just Lauren, but I think Lauren and Chrissy being what I would probably consider like the two at this point, like defining women on this season, being of the older variety, I think is hopefully going to be a wake up call for CBS that, frankly, in a lot of these recent seasons, it's been the older women who are really providing a lot of the entertainment. All right. So I guess let's also tack on that Ben times finding an idol very well, where he doesn't have to lie to the group about not having it, but he finds one shortly thereafter. They all get letters from home. He's off reading his on some rock somewhere. And as he's walking back to camp, just happens upon this X marks the spot kind of giant clue, which turns out to just be a map to a new idol. He goes and finds it. He's very excited. And Dom, he's going to keep it to himself. Are you in on that, or should he come clean and tell his new alliance so there's full disclosure?
I am definitely in. And if I'm Ben, seeing how cutthroat Lauren has seemingly become, I'm worried that she's going to turn this around on me at some point. If as much as she seems loyal and trustworthy and everything, and the two of them seem to have this very unique bond, I would be keeping it to myself unless I had a good reason to tell anyone, which, like, we saw how this is working out for Ryan, didn't we? So, I think people, because you can track the evolution of this over time, where for a while people were just like, okay, I found the idol, I'm keeping it to myself unless there's someone I really have to tell. And then it seemed like people were just telling everyone they could as a way to build trust. And I don't know what point on that curve we're at right now, I think, all else being equal, just keep it to yourself unless something comes up where you have to tell someone.
Right, especially when you're in this new position, it seems like things are going your way, and if the next vote goes your way, or the next couple of votes go your way, which it seems overwhelmingly likely they will, your group is just going to have majority throughout. At that point, I would be worried that my group would no longer think, oh, great job, Ben, getting the idol and keeping it out of the enemy's hands. They would think, oh, we're all equal, but Ben has an idol, and we need to be really worried about that.
Well, if I'm Ben, I'm thinking they already see me as the biggest threat, who at some point, if they're going to trim the fat, I'm going to be the first target. I don't want them to have to move that up any further, right? I want them to think that they can put that off for as long as possible, which if you have an idol on top of Ben seemingly being pretty good in challenges, then that's a pretty dangerous combination.
No, I agree. So Ben, I guess just Ben with the idol now, do you feel like this is going to result in him blindsiding someone? Because to me, for whatever reason, it just feels like this is going to be one of those idols that just he plays it the last round he can, and he just keeps it out of the play, essentially.
Yeah, either that or is in his pocket as he walks out the door. I don't think that he's going to use it to alter. It's not going to change the outcome of the game in any way, I think. But I would like to be proven wrong on that.
Okay. I would certainly love to see Ben, like, as soon as this next week, end up leaving the game with an idol in his pocket. I think that would be some incredible storytelling. Well,
of course you would, because that would validate everything you've said about Devin for the past month and a half. But I see where you're coming from. I think Ben is being set up as either... So I think it's going to come down to, clearly someone's going to make a move on Ben. Will he be able to sniff that out and play his idol? Because if he does, and he does it successfully, and we hear from Ben about how, you know, he was able to discover this and that, you know, how this plays into his game, lock it in for Ben, regardless of anything else that's going on with Devin at the moment. But I could see how, like, Ben being taken down is the one thing that just catapults either Devin or maybe someone else into that top tier where no one else is going to be able to dislodge them.
Okay, so if I were to rank order them, what you're kind of suggesting is potentially Ben, it's like Yao Man in Fiji, where he's like, I got bad vibes. He plays the idols himself. That saves the day. That's one possibility for Ben's idol. Another possibility is he leaves with the idol in his pocket. I would say, though, that the most likely possibility for me is that things just keep going according to plan for Ben, and he keeps not having to use it, and then may or may not use it the week it expires.
Yeah, to clarify, I think it's not going to be something which he uses as a tool to help other people or to, like, engineer this blindside. It's going to be, if he has to use it, it's because people are coming for him, and he realizes that and has to play it.
I agree. I think the least likely, right, that you're right, is he engineers some kind of, like, Natalie Anderson final five situation, or whatever it was, final six situation, where he uses the idol, like, to take out the person he wants. I don't see that just yet.
Though if he wants to emulate Natalie Anderson, I'm all for that, which is not something that me in 2013 would ever have expected to say, but here we are.
But I haven't admitted to this nearly enough on the podcast, but truly the reason that I stopped watching The Amazing Race, I quit watching the show because I couldn't stand the twinnies. And now I love, obviously, Natalie Anderson these days, but like, just go back and listen to our San Juan del Sur preview podcast if you want to hear what we thought of them based on The Amazing Race.
I wonder how Nadia has aged over time. Like, if you go back and watch their seasons, obviously Natalie is going to change your perception of them, but like, does Nadia still come across the same? Someone needs to run like an experiment on that, a controlled study, if you will.
Yeah, well, I think the general conclusion has been they're great when they're not together.
Sure. Yeah, and I guess we didn't get enough of Nadia to test that theory in Survivor, but I could buy that. Let's go back really to Lauren, because Lauren in that group meeting ends up admonishing Ben that he's going to have to put his differences aside with Joe, and we hear Ben say in a confessional that he'll do that if he has to, despite how much he hates Joe. So it's interesting that Lauren's directness never seems to work against her. We don't hear people say, oh, well, Lauren is so domineering and she thinks she's running the show. Or people don't seem to be put off by that the way they were with Ben supposedly steamrolling everyone. And I wonder if, because that seems like such an intrinsic part of Lauren's personality, it comes across as just honesty, right? Like, it's, oh, that's just Lauren being Lauren. It's not like I can get offended because, well, like, what did you really expect? Whereas with Ben, like, you see him as this kind of really nice, easygoing guy, and so when he's putting his foot down or being insistent, it comes across as maybe more aggressive than it's intended.
Yeah, I didn't want to go here, and I still don't because of the two challenge wins, but I did have a thought right around the merge time that I will, I didn't want to get into this, but I'll put it out there now. I was really thinking that Lauren, to me, looked like a much, much more capable version of Sandra, where no one is viewing her as a threat, but she's actively doing things to take advantage of that rather than trying to shoot herself in the foot. They just view her just as, they're like, oh, that's just how Lauren is. And she can get away with saying whatever she wants without ever being viewed as a threat.
That is a truly volcanic take, but I could be on board. I could come out of this, actually.
Okay. Well, I think the comparisons have started to die, but that's how, like, their approach, like their position in the game was, no one is taking you seriously. But Lauren, to me, was demonstrating a lot of strategic agency in trying to improve her position and actively take advantage of that. Whereas, obviously, I think she did a lot better on Game Changers. But Sandra's first two seasons, I think she more or less backed into it. And we don't need to get into it again, Dom. But that is a thought that I at least wanted to put out into the ether, is that that was a comparison that came up for me earlier on.
Okay, we can reset the sign now. It's officially been 0 days since our last Sandra debate.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not. If you were sorry, you would stop doing it. That's how apologies work. An apology carries the implicit promise that you will stop trying to do that thing. But here we are for the 46th time. And it's never going to stop. We're going to have this exact conversation again, this time next season. So I don't even know where I was, so I'll pick up.
What was the original question? Yeah. I'm sorry, about Lauren.
Well, I don't know what that was, but the new question is, so Jesus Christ.
I'm sorry, I've melted the podcast. I've broken Dom.
God. Comparison between Ben and Lauren and their different communication styles, I guess.
Oh, okay. So I think you are right that Lauren, that's what I was getting at, is Lauren gets away with murder. She can say whatever she wants. It's great. It's like one of the best spots you can be in Survivor, whereas Ben, as we've seen, has a tendency to be viewed as kind of a dictator. I think it's a great situation to be. Lauren's doing it far better than Ben is, as far as I can tell.
Do you see any shades of Twyla in Lauren?
Totally. Yeah. And likewise in Sandra. Like, I think they are, it just went better for Sandra. She wound up against much easier people to beat.
But I bring that up because Twyla stands out as someone who definitely did not get away with it, who was constantly criticized for the way that she treated people. So I don't think Lauren is taking it to quite the same level, but I worry that if she does end up in front of her jury, that bluntness is not going to come across as endearing, especially if so many of them feel betrayed by her.
Right, and that's the thing is Sandra is fantastic at Final Tribal Council. I would say that's because she knew she already won both times and she couldn't lose and she'd already counted the $1 million the night before. Whereas I do not think that Lauren here is necessarily going to be too great at Final Tribal Council. I could definitely see that being an issue for her. But that, I mean, it kind of goes both ways, where that if you want to be able to get away with that in the middle of the game, that's for people not as talented as Sandra, how it's going to be.
Yeah. So
did I save myself? Did I bail myself out there?
No, you didn't. As a follow up, so when Ben ends up finding this idol, we get the letters from home, which I'll talk about again in a second, and then Ben talks about how he went through combat, which this is becoming more of a recurring theme than Lauren playing softball or Ryan never having a girlfriend. Like Ben being in combat is his motif.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we hear that again. He talks about how his family was so supportive in helping him through that, and how this letter means so much for him with the glowing music in the background, as you would expect. And then he goes on to find the idol. This feels like a winner's montage kind of scene. Not to drag us into the edit zone, but this is very typical, right? Like this is you can tell exactly what they're going for here.
Right. This is the exact same blueprint as the Jeremy Collins spends some time on the beach thinking about his family back at home and uses that motivation to go find the idol. Or Adam Klein spends some time thinking about his family on the beach and uses that motivation to go find the idol. I think we have certainly seen this before, and you may be onto something there, Dom.
Okay.
All right. I'm sorry for breaking the podcast. I didn't mean to do it. I didn't mean to do it like whatever we are, 30 minutes, 35 minutes into the podcast I don't know why we're even bothering with the rest of this episode.
So to try and reassemble the pieces back together, that scene where they're all given the letters, I wonder if that's something which you take to a face value of just them being so relieved to hear from their loved ones and to get that really nice touching moment. But I wonder if that's actually like an underrated aspect of what they want that reward to do, which is give these random groups of people a chance to bond together and maybe overturn the game, because it seemed like that shared experience really just binds them together in such a quick and enduring way. Even when it's someone who is on the outs and who isn't actually that well liked in the group, you often get these confessionals of other people saying, you know, seeing him with that letter from home really made me understand them and relate to them and like them in a way that I haven't before. And in this case, when it seemed like they were all on the same page, this really accelerated it, right? This is now a true like a friendship group and not just like a marriage of convenience.
Right. I think you're certainly right that has happened before. And I'm sure the letters from home do a tremendous job of humanizing people that are on like opposite alliances from you. If you're out there and you get to hear about their family and see them really have these like raw human reactions to things, I'm sure that kind of puts the game more in perspective for a lot of people. But I don't know if it's ever been the catalyst for anything necessarily. It may have been like an accelerant to open up a crack that was already there, but I don't know. Like, no, they could have gotten family letters every day and nothing was getting in between the Ometepes or whatever.
Right.
Use an obviously extreme example, but I think there are plenty of situations where plenty of people have been inclined, oh, maybe I'll flip, maybe I won't. I really don't think a letter's ever going to swing someone.
No, and I think when it does matter, it's usually in a subconscious way and not something that they could really acknowledge through the edit as easily. So maybe this is just completely unfalsifiable and I'm just going off on a theory here. But to me, it's, if you're trying to, as a producer, mix up the game by forcing these people together, giving them something to bond over seems like a great way of making that work, if it can.
It might be fake news. So sorry if it is, but did they get letters at that reward last season where Sarah and Brad and Troy's in, like, locked everything in and were swearing up and down on their family and so forth? Like, could that have inspired all of this kind of, like, deep emotional sentiment?
Again, if one of the two of us is going to know that, it's going to be you. So I pass.
Okay.
Whatever your answer is, that's the new truth. That's the official reality.
Okay. I'm going to direct that question for Twitter instead of at Dom. So let me know, I suppose, if I'm making that up. But you're definitely right that the family element and just getting the letters is a real it certainly causes, like, all I can think of is, like, it spikes the game, but that's not, it injects new life into the game in, like, a short, but what am I getting at, Dom? You know what I'm saying? What's the word I'm looking for?
It revitalizes? I don't know, but I...
Right, there you go. Thank you. That works.
I think the best example would be, like, and I think it's different when you actually have them there in person, but, like, Lisa's visit from her brother, let's say, that potentially breaks open the whole game, where without that, she doesn't get that cutthroat mentality that she needs in order to cut Penna, for instance, and to seek out that alliance with Malcolm and Denise and to be willing to play in such an aggressive way. And hopefully when the loved ones are actually there next week, as it seems like they are from the preview, we're going to see some more of that. But I think any reminder of home is a reminder of what they're playing for, and that there is a bigger priority out there than just being loyal to their alliance or to making friends or to whatever. Like, it keeps them, it keeps their eyes on the prize, which I think is always a good thing.
Right. I think Lisa Welcher, you're right, is the ultimate example of that. When Justice comes out and she goes, oh yeah, I'm out here playing for $1 million. And actually, I think Steven talked about when his brother came out to Token Sheens, he was saying, like, I don't know if I want to go to the end with JT. Like, I think he'll beat me. And his brother's like, you've known this guy for 30 days. What are you thinking about? And it kind of got him focused back. Not that that worked out, but you know what I'm saying. So wow. Let's okay. So we had the annual Eat or Compete immunity challenge. I say this every time. I'll quickly say it again. They should do this before every single immunity challenge, where I think it is so much easier to get away with choosing to eat once when people think, oh, this is going to be the only opportunity for some free food right at any time soon. If you put out, it doesn't have to be big food rewards every time, but if you just put out some, like, chocolate or some cheese and crackers, or you get a bottle of champagne if you sit out of this immunity, and just put some little small reward in there each time, that will add up. If people sit out of several challenges in a row, some that will make a difference in people's minds. If they see, oh, whoever it is, Ben doesn't want to participate 3 weeks in a row or whatever, that's going to set off some alarm bells in a way that only doing it once a season never ever could.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess the worry would be that everyone realizes what's going on, and so eventually you have, like, everybody sits out of one challenge at staggered intervals, so you don't get that thing of, oh, half of my alliance is sitting out of the challenge and I have to play, and what's up with that? It just becomes this very, like, neutered thing. But maybe that's giving people too much credit. Maybe people would just get so greedy that they would be making this mistake, and people would get mad at them. And you may as well try it at least once, right, to see if that's gonna work.
Right. Give it. Listen, Tom. Survivor 36 is called Ghost Island. Like, are you telling me we can't try the Eat or Play challenge more than once in a season? I really feel like the way to mix the game up is by doing things like this, like offering opportunities for people to make unforced errors. And we always would talk about how much better it was, and we got it this episode, to their credit, where someone wins a reward and has to pick a bunch of people to go on that reward. And Lauren, of course, did a bang up job. But I think that should be a more regular thing too. And I know some of that has to do with, like, time constraints on episodes or whatever, but it really opened up the political game a lot more when one person had to pick one or two people to go with them on a reward instead of all of these randomly drawn team rewards. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would definitely be on, but at least give it a shot. I really think that is an avenue for potential drama and just potential, like, fun game changing dynamics of having someone sit out several challenges in a row and then have people get mad at them for it. I think it would be a really interesting possibility. All right. So things are looking good for this foursome. And they decide that while we have Joe and Mike still here, why not use those extra votes and turn a little early on Chrissy, Ryan, and JP here? And Devin seems to be the one really presenting a lot of this plan. And this also involves, you know, this is how they come up with the idea of, okay, and then the fallout from that, Ben, you'll vote for Mike and you'll be a double agent. You'll tell us all of what they're thinking, potentially induce a bad idol play by Ryan. I'm wondering though, Dom, was this really necessary to turn on the Chrissy, Ryan, and JP threesome so soon, when you could just as easily, as far as I could tell, stay with them, vote out the other two, and then you have a locked-in majority at Final Seven, versus doing it now, you at least open the door for Chrissy, Ryan, Joe, and Mike to do something the following week.
So maybe it was finding out about Ryan's idol that spurred a lot of this, because if you take it down to seven and then, let's say, JP wins immunity and then Ryan realizes what's going on because he's thinking ahead like everyone else is, then maybe you have an issue and maybe that's something that's going to be hard to work around.
You still have Lauren's extra vote.
Which is not going to matter if it's five against three, right? Like, you can't
split
it.
Sure. Right. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Of course, thank you. So if you want to, if you want to split it, now would be the time to do so. Or if you want to preempt that and take out Ryan's idol so that that's not an issue anymore, then you want to strike first. I guess also if a plan goes wrong, you it's nice to at least have a week to regroup and come up with a new plan. And so if you think that Chrissy, Ryan, and JP are all voting for Joe or Mike, then you take your shot now, knowing that if it doesn't work, well, the only casualty is going to be one of them instead. I guess also you could think that, like, if Ben was able to conceivably patch up his relationship with Joe, maybe Chrissy could do that too. And so if Chrissy and Ryan decide, well, we need to make a move now, we need to go against Lauren and Devin, or maybe Ben's getting too big for his britches, then they could maybe try and drag Joe and Mike in too. So if it's going to be a contest for Joe and Mike's votes, you want to be the first ones in there. So I can understand wanting to do it now. I guess, like, if I was Mike, though, I would want to be there with Cole instead of Joe, because, like, I know Cole is just going to go along with the flow. Because this is the kind of thing that you're imagining, right? Where people are going to come to you asking you to be these extra votes that they need. It's much easier to imagine, I think, Cole being an extra vote for one round, and then maybe they lop off Cole later. But you don't even care about that at that point, because you've got what you want.
Yeah, that is, to go back to, I mean, I know we opened the episode talking about this, but that is probably a really compelling reason to keep Cole. Just the idea that people would be much more inclined to flip back over to you if it's Cole there with you instead of Joe. Because, like, I think Mike wanted to stay with Joe instead of Cole because he thought Joe was a better player. But that would probably, from the other side's perspective, make them far less interested in flipping back over to Joe compared to Cole. I guess the other way that they're planning on getting around this, by the way, is by having Ben go in there and be that double agent and act like he didn't know what was going on. And I think you probably are right that it is Ryan's idol is probably the primary consideration behind why we can't just go down to seven.
Mm-hmm. To jump ahead on that, there was some debate over why, if that's the case, you would go for JP here instead of Ryan, because why not just lance that issue immediately? And the theory I heard was that, well, you don't want the idol to get re-hidden, because if it does, Joe is probably going to find it, or at least there's a chance that now someone else finds it and you don't know about it, and that's a new variable that you introduce into the game, which kind of makes sense to me. But then, like, you're just making sure that Ryan's going to play it next round anyway, so I don't know how much value there is in that. Like, the whole thing just seemed kind of weird to me, but I'm sure we'll get there in due course.
It may be the case that through whatever kind of propaganda techniques they needed to, they have thoroughly talked, you know, the entire four has all convinced themselves Ryan is never to be trusted, we can never work with Ryan, whereas Joe might be someone even more than, like, Ryan might be even worse than Joe in terms of who people would be willing to flip back over with. So they may feel like, we'll take out Joe, that if something were to go wrong, maybe Ashley would flip back over to Joe, but she's not going to do it with Ryan.
Okay.
Sure. That's at least one idea. Okay, that's definitely it. I think that's the conclusion we've arrived at. So JP is our boot here, and Dom, he doesn't even just get hashtag blindside popped up on the screen. He gets hashtag epic blindside. Is this, I guess for the third time, I'll ask you some arcane Survivor trivia question. Have we ever gotten hashtag epic blindside before?
I feel like if we had, I would have complained about it, and I would probably remember that. So I'm going to say no, but nothing would shock me at this point. I would put nothing past them.
Are you going to complain about it now?
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like, so hashtags already are a dangerous game, and we've used them far too liberally in the past. I think if
this is such fear mongering. Hashtags are a dangerous game.
They really are. Look, if you're going to go with epic blindside, I feel like you should give the object of that blindside more than, let's say, three confessionals over the entire course of the season. You should at least make them someone that people recognize when they get voted out.
Yeah, I know. I believe it's the case that JP did not get a single confessional during this his boot episode, and I think I saw entering this week he had only had 5 total confessionals on the entire season. And I thought it was funny that Simone had 4 total confessionals back when she was on the season. JP barely outdoing Simone over the course of this season.
So
with
here's the $2,000 question for you. Who are the only other people to get to not get a confessional in their boot episode?
To not get a confessional in their boot episode, I have. I do know. Give me a minute, and I'll talk about something else while I think about this, and make it something I don't have to listen to. So, I do. Give me some time, and we'll come back to this question, because I do know a couple of these answers. It's just going to take me a second to think of them.
Okay.
Parting thoughts on.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Look, we're going to have a minute of just talking over each other to buy some time. But in the meantime, I guess. Do you think there is any other case for voting out JP instead of Ryan? Because it seems like the kind of thing which it so obviously doesn't make sense on paper that there must be some other factor that we're not privy to, unless we think that all of these people are just making the same mistake, which seems unlikely if you want to give them any credit at all.
Yeah, I did think it was weird that they ended up voting out JP. And as we were in here in previous weeks, I kept wondering myself, how is JP gonna get voted out anytime soon, but also how is he gonna be in there deep? And we were talking about, oh, maybe he gets down to final five, or maybe he's in the finals and just doesn't get any votes and he's the Troyzan figure. To me, I honestly feel like this is what I had in the back of my mind been just envisioning for JP all along, which is an unceremonious mid kind of jury finish, which is no real fanfare, and they certainly delivered on that, on no real fanfare.
Yeah, maybe it's just that old school mentality of he's good in trousers, therefore we have to take him out, right? That seems like the default rationale for a vote if there's nothing else in play.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it came down to, is JP, even though we've seen, I guess it's, they hadn't seen Chrissy win in immunity at this point, but even though we've seen, actually, more to the point, they'd seen Chrissy and Ryan do horribly in challenges to this point. So it's probably that. It's probably that's what it came down to.
I guess, but are you that worried about JP just turning into Brad Culpepper and winning the last 4 or 5 immunities? I guess there's a chance, but it seems like a vanishingly small chance.
I agree with that. And that's why I was wondering that's why I thought it might even just be fancy play syndrome to be booting JP or any of them right here, when you could just take a shot at one of Joe or Mike.
Mm-hmm. So,
all right. The best I can do.
I was going to say it's been a lot longer than a minute, so I'm hoping for something good here.
Okay. That's where I was going. The best I can do is this happened somewhat recently, right around the merge to a blonde woman. I don't know. I remember this happening during a season that we covered. Someone got voted out with no confessionals. I feel like I remember that. So give me the list of who it was.
Well, I don't have a list. This is another thing we need to crowdsource from Twitter. But I know that he's joining.
You don't have any answers? No. We're putting the question out there.
I was literally asking you so that you could educate me. I know that he's joining.
I'm going to Google it.
I know that he's joining a very illustrious club, although I don't know who the other members are just yet.
I'm Googling it. There's no way we're putting that out there without giving the answer. I guess we are going to put that out because I can't find it. Google is returning nothing. I'm going to tweet it out right now, and we're going to hopefully get an answer before the end of this podcast. Because I can't, I'm not going to be the guy who puts that kind of trivia out there and then doesn't actually give any of the answers, especially when the answers aren't Googleable. So by the end of this podcast, we will hopefully have some answers to that question. But Dom, in the meantime, give me, I guess, just brief parting thoughts on JP.
He actually seemed like a really solid guy. There's really nothing more to say. I mean, there's no game-related discussion to be had, right? So you can only go on the very brief glimpses of his personality that you get in Secret Scenes, in Ponderosa, and on Twitter, and everyone who was there with him seemed to testify that, yeah, he's just a solid, upstanding guy. So there's really nothing else to say. Give me material. If this is a delaying tactic, speak for a minute about JP, I can't do it. There is not a minute's worth of content to say about JP, so don't leave me twisting on the wind here.
Do you have any fire takes about him not doing as much exit press? Do you feel like he's not giving the super fans what we deserve, Dom? We deserve better from JP. How dare you, sir?
I can definitely go off on that. So if you're the kind of person who cares strongly about this, you're probably not someone who is going to listen to his exit interviews in the first place. You're complaining about interviews non-existing that you didn't want to exist anyway, and they're just going to clutter up your Twitter feed. You never cared. You hashtag never cared. You never actually...
Hashtag never cared.
Right. It's not like JP promised you a service, or you were eagerly waiting to refresh your browser for the latest JP interview. You were going to read or listen to it anyway. So what difference does it make to your life? It's just a sense of entitlement that people seem to have that just doesn't correspond to reality in any way. And I enjoy seeing people who otherwise would themselves be on the wrong end of some fiery hot takes light other people up for their treatment of the JP exit press issue.
Yeah. All right. Well, there goes JP. So we get back from the JP vote, and Joe and Mike are now ecstatic. Joe even goes so far as to tell Chrissy, hey, be glad it wasn't you. Like, hey, you think I'm stupid? Of course I'm not going in there without a plan. You should be happy to just be here right now. And I thought it was interesting, actually, Dom, that this back half of the episode is really where I feel like Devin starts becoming a big time like mastermind for this group. Like, we start hearing just a lot more from Devin, and I'm wondering what you thought of just the tone of that, because you're right. I came in here last week and talked about how Devin was my new front runner and he was looking so great. Chrissy, the quote that really stood out to me and just kind of caught my attention, made me really start taking a more critical look at the back half of this episode, was Chrissy says, am I allowed to ask when the plan was crafted? And Devin says, you can ask, but I'm not going to answer. He then immediately, in like a sequence of back-to-back scenes, is really blunt with Ryan about not trusting him anymore. And Ryan, I think, actually comes across as somewhat sympathetic during that scene for the first time in a really long time by saying, like, I've never wavered from you. I voted how we planned on voting. Like, I'm the one who's in the dark here. And Devin is essentially saying, hey, I got nothing for you. You're the one who lied to me. And then when he's talking to Ben, he says, hey, Ben, once we get rid of just one more person, we have the majority. He's got like this evil smile the whole time, by the way. And he says, and then we can just be open with people. We don't even have to hide it. I really feel like Devin has been getting a big kind of swell in both his ego, his visibility, and potentially reasons not to believe in Devin.
Yeah. And all of this coming off of his confessional about how openly arrogant Chrissy and Ryan are, that they think they're running the game and they've got everything figured out. So maybe, as Ryan would say, it's not a good look for Devin, but this is surprising me, because this is exactly the kind of game-related content where Devin comes up with a plan and executes it and everyone else is on board that would make me actually buy into this whole Devin fanfiction that people have been constructing over the past few weeks. Like, this seems like exactly the kind of thing that, you know, if I'd had this 2 weeks ago, I would have been joining you on that Devin bandwagon.
Yeah. So I mean, we'll get more into that a little later, because I think the Devin as a possible winner, it's not obviously breaking news that Devin might win this season. We'll get more into that, though, in the edit zone, because I think there's a lot of nuance to Devin over the course of this episode that I think is really, and it starts here for me. And eventually, Don, by the way, we'll literally see Devin put on the black hat this episode. So there could be some symbolism there as well. Regardless, it seems like he's certainly becoming something of a mastermind over the last 6 or 7 days here. And so far, things keep going his way.
And like every aspiring mastermind, he has a great British accent, is what we've learned. What I wonder about Devin is he comes up with this complicated scheme where Ben's going to be this double agent and they're going to hide his vote. What is this actually doing? Like, what is this meant to accomplish?
Well, it's meant to accomplish them not having any real counterplay. Like, whatever they being Chrissy and Ryan are going to attempt to do, especially if Ryan still has that idol, Ben is going to be in there. He's going to be able to hopefully even influence what they attempt to do. And even if they have a great plan, we're going to know about it, and we're going to know how that idol is. We're going to hopefully know how that idol is being played, if it's being played.
So the thing that I thought at first was, maybe in order to get Joe and Mike on board, they had to not have it be Ben, or at least not tell them that Ben was in on the plan, because if like, it's much easier to get them on board if they think they're making this move against Ben. But then they're so desperate that they'll just go with whatever you tell them at this point, right? And then also, at some point, aren't they going to ask the question, well, if we're making a move against that side and Ben is King Arthur, why not just vote out Ben? Like, why are we going for JP of all people?
Well, this returns to my question of, it seems like this should not check out for the other people, but there is something too. Ben did put his vote on Mike, and we are super desperate, and what the hell else are we going to go for?
Yeah, it just seems like when Joe is super eager to vote for Ben, and is surely going to float this idea at some point, what is your response going to be? Like, you're going to say, oh, well, you're just going to have to invent some reason why it has to be JP right now. And it's not like they can do anything else. They have to go along with it for the moment. But for this next vote, the one where they end up voting out Joe, like, I imagine this topic must have come up. And it's not really one which you can have a good answer to.
Yeah. No, I agree. And this, I'm having a hard time not being results oriented, seeing how well they executed, this kind of like Ben as a double agent plan. And I think they did have, like, they were right in thinking they're going to be concerned and we want someone in there on like an inside man. And they came up with a good plan. They executed on it, as far as I can tell, really well. I still, even seeing it work out, wonder if this was the right idea to go for something like this. It seems you're right. Like, just being straightforward could have been just as effective and potentially even less risky. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. The reason I'm against it is, it seems like Ben has to now spend 3 days deeply undercover, which is just so hard to do.
Maybe it does come back to this idea of setting up Ben, right? Because if this plan doesn't work, it's because Ben probably messed it up. And if so, that puts an even bigger target on him. So maybe this is like a great long-term idea by Devon of, like, okay, we can clean out the other side of this alliance first, and then Ben is going to be the most obvious and biggest target you can imagine, and that's going to work out perfectly for him.
Yeah, I remember Steven saying on the Know-It-Alls that he thought it was great for Ben that Devon came to him and said, hey, you go be the double agent, because Steven was saying, you know, the place you want to be is the double agent where you're getting the info from both sides. I think there, you may be onto something, though, that Devin's saying, hey, Ben, you go be the double agent, getting their hopes up. And then later on, this is a great way to set you up as a big jury threat, or even, you know, whether you are a big jury threat or not, it's a good argument to make. And then potentially, as we talked about earlier as well, the people whose hopes you have gotten up and then completely conned for like 72 consecutive hours are probably not going to be thrilled with you.
Yeah, so let's tie this into the second half of this episode, which is where I really start to get confused about what's going on, because they end up voting out Joe, which you can understand wanting to vote out to break up Joe and Mike at some point. I question why you just didn't do it before if you wanted to do that, but maybe there's some factor there we're not thinking about. But what this makes you think, though, is, so now Joe's gone, Mike feels betrayed by the people that he thought he was voting with, and so he is a completely free agent, right? He's in the market for anyone who will possibly have him. And he doesn't have Joe to constrain what he can do now. He can just be his own person. And so I think his first impulse is going to be, well, maybe this other side has a deal too now. Like, they felt betrayed, I feel betrayed, maybe we can make something work. And honestly, if I'm Ben, I'm starting to think this actually makes a lot of sense if I just go with that instead, because I still have my cover, right? If I go and I vote with Chrissy and with Ryan and with Mike, then if Devon or Ashley goes to them and says, oh, well, actually, Ben was part of this double agent thing the whole time, that's going to sound like they're trying to frame him. It's not going to seem like that he actually had anything to do with it. And if I'm Ben, I'm going to take my chances with Chrissy and maybe Ryan, who doesn't have his idol anymore, and Mike, who no one really has any connection to, over, let's say, Devon and Ashley, who seem to be this really tight pair, and maybe with Lauren, who is showing a much more ruthless side to herself than any of us imagined at first. And maybe Ben has reason to think he is that much more ingrained with this group. But I don't know. It seems like when it comes down to it, Devon and Ashley are going to be gunning hard for Ben, and Lauren, as much as he might like Ben and want to work with him, is going to understand the need to get him out. So for someone who is that big a threat, maybe it makes sense to just keep like flipping back to the people who have just been betrayed and see what you can do with it.
Well, I guess we haven't even talked through this, but is there that possibility that next week we show up and Ben flips?
What's your take on this? I'm just going to piggyback off you.
No, is my take on this. I think he's going to roll with it. And I think you make really good points, but I think flipping over is very needlessly risky as far as I can tell, if he feels like he's going to be in good shape with the others. And I would just feel in general better about, if I'm thinking about the end game, being there against Devin, Ashley, and Lauren than up against Chrissy and Ryan and Mike.
As in, you would prefer to be up against Devin and Ashley and so on?
Right. I would much prefer to be up against that first group than that second group. In particular, Mike, who the entire jury is now Mike's old teammates.
Well, when you say be up against, do you mean in terms of like figuring out a way through the end game, or when you're actually in front of the jury, being able to get the votes when you get there?
In front of the jury is what I'm saying. Sorry.
Because I'm taking it for granted, and maybe I shouldn't be, that Ben probably beats anyone else in the round table, except for maybe Devin, who is now on the other side of the one that you're thinking about, but obviously doesn't want to go up against Mike. But to me, that's maybe even a better argument for keeping Mike around and going with that side, because now, like, Mike is someone you can point to as he has all of these friends on the jury. We can't possibly let him get to the end, and he's that ideal buffer for if you want to drag him along to Final Five, maybe even Final Four.
Okay, Dom, I'm going to be honest. I missed the back half of what you were saying there because the results are in. We have the zero vote receiving during their boot, or zero confessional receiving during their vote off episode, people. This is courtesy of Reddit. We got several people on Twitter sent us this link. I tweeted it out. A big thank you to a great friend of the show now, Amanda Rabinowitz, Jack, and also John Densford with the hilarious joke response. So here it is via Reddit, and this is current through a couple of seasons ago, at least. We will just quickly roll through. This is actually far more common than I'd ever realized, and several of them are old. But back in the day, we had Kim Powers, we had Aaron from Thailand, Joanna from the Amazon, Morgan from Guatemala, Cecilia from Cook Island. Stop me if you're noticing a pattern here, Don. These are all women, by the way, so far, that have not gotten any. Brad from Cook Islands, Rebecca from Cook Islands. Very balanced edit, Cook Islands. The very historically well-renowned. Three people eliminated without a confessional in their boot. Rita from Fiji. The aforementioned Yao Man in Micronesia did not get a confessional. Courtney in Heroes versus Villains and Candace in Heroes versus Villains didn't get any confessionals in their boot episodes because that would have eaten into Russell's screen time. Keith in Survivor South Pacific, the merge boot, didn't get a confessional when he got eliminated at the merge. Leaf in One World, Michael Snow in Karamoan, Eric Reichenbach at the beginning of that finale in Karamoan, there was, you know, he got evacuated 30 seconds into it. There wasn't time for a confessional. Katie Collins, Love of My Life in Blood versus Water, Wes Nail, Terry Dietz, and Caleb both on the same kind of like Eric logic. And now Dominic, a blonde woman voted out recently right around the merge. Sunday Burquist was the person I was thinking of. And so we went through way, way too much unnecessary content to get there. But there is your list of the people, the many people, it turns out, who have been voted out without a confessional in their boot episode.
Well, now that this thrilling saga has come to an end, was it all worth it? Was it worth the wait?
Not even remotely. I wish asked me this question in the first place. No, that was horrible. And it took me way longer to read through them than I was thinking it would.
This was...
Sorry, what were you saying before that?
This was an utterly pointless endeavor. Anyway, what I was saying was... I'm not sure, because it took you so long to read that list that all of my recent memories have vanished. But I think it was something like... Ben can beat anyone. Ben probably can't beat Mike, but that's a good thing in a way. And of the other people, I would be most worried about Devin probably, which I don't know.
Yeah, I think actually that is a good point, that Mike being viewed as a threat could be a really, really critical tool for people, like leaving Mike in to potentially be one of those late round buffers of like, guys, our hands are tied. We have to get rid of Mike, or he's obviously going to win if he gets to sit in front of so many healers and people he didn't vote out in front of the jury.
And this, I think you can build a path for Ben to get to the end. So if he stays with the group he's with at the moment, like if Lauren genuinely is his ride or die and he has that to count on, then maybe it does make a lot more sense to stick with that group. But otherwise, let's say, okay, you vote out Chrissy and Ryan in some order. You probably want to vote out Mike at some point. You can get around to that. But then is Ben just hoping to win his way to the end? Which he could very conceivably do, but I think he's ensuring that he has to do that.
Okay.
I guess maybe if Lauren is that loyal to him, but they don't recognize that, and so although because they don't even know about this new format, do they? They don't know about the final four.
Right, that's the thing. They don't know about the format. But just going back to it, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility based on what we saw last week when we really got the setup for that Ben and Devin duo emerging. I do not think it's out of the realm of possibility that they both want to go to the end with each other because they think they're going to beat the other people that they're there with.
That could be interesting. Although, so Devin, I think, might be difficult, genuinely. Lauren, we just don't know how she's perceived, really. But I imagine that thing I mentioned earlier could come into play where, like, she gets roasted by the jury the way that Twyla did. And then Ashley is seen as a goat, it seems. And then Chrissy, we've been having her penciled in as, like, this zero vote getting finalist. So I don't think anything is really changing that so far. And then Ryan doesn't seem like he has the respect of the group and probably not of the jury either. So I'm not sure who Ben would be that concerned about beating. And so the question becomes, given that, what's the best path to get to the end? And if he flips over, then, like, I imagine you vote out Devin, maybe you vote out Ashley. I guess it depends how angry Lauren is at you. And then a final five.
You have to take out Mike soon. Perfect buffer for that spot.
Yeah. What I'm saying is, so a final five, you know that Chrissy and Ryan are this tight pair. So that's a good argument for people to gang up on them. And then at final four, Mike suddenly, like, you, there's no way you can let Mike get to the end.
Right.
So then it just becomes, can Mike win that final challenge? Now, obviously, it becomes trickier if you know about this twist when, like, now Mike can guarantee that he gets to the end if he wins one of two different challenges. But that honestly could be how Ben gets to the end. Like, what if Ben, maybe he wins an immunity at the right time, maybe they let him get to Final Four thinking, like, in the David Wright mold, we're going to cut him then. And then suddenly, big twist gets announced. Ben now only needs to win a fire challenge and he wins the game.
Well, I definitely see what you're saying, where Ben, it could be the next Mike Holloway, where he just goes on this crazy run to get himself there. My question just would be, it was very clear why Mike would be very good at the challenges compared to the people that he was competing against. What challenge is Ben going to be the best at? It seems like anything he would be good at, Devin would be better at, and anything else Chrissy or Ryan or someone small would be good at.
Sure, but where are you going with that?
It's hard for him to go on a challenge run, is my point, when it seems like he's not going to be the favorite in pretty much any challenge.
Yeah, and I'm saying that's why he shouldn't rely on being able to do that. Like, if you...
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, if you are Mike Holloway or someone in that mold, then maybe it makes sense to put your eggs in that basket. But for Ben, that seems optimistic, to say the least.
It seems like the best strategy. Yeah. All right. So I guess let's talk a little bit quickly about Chrissy, because another thing, I think it was on the Know-It-Alls that I was listening to, is they were trying to come up with a good comparison for Chrissy. The one that's always stuck out to me was Monica Culpepper. It seems like Chrissy could be the latest in the, she could be Monica Culpepper 3.0 here, Dom. And I mean this in a very good way. Like, Monica was someone I always really enjoyed having on the show, and was a kind of archetype that I was hoping would become more of a thing, is this really active gamer older woman, compared to most of the other older women that we've had on the cast. And Chrissy, I think, is doing, while it's not going as well for her now as it was up until this point, I still think Chrissy is doing a really good job. I'm really enjoying watching her every week, and I certainly think she could still make it to the end.
What's the status of any outstanding bets on whether Ben and Chrissy are going to be there together, whether Chrissy makes it there? Have the odds expanded or tightened or whatever the phrase is for that? Like, give us an update on all of that.
Okay, so what Dom is referencing is back in, like, episode whatever, it was like 3 or something insane, I said I wanted to make a bet. I want 2-1. I'll put up 20 to win 40 that both Ben and Chrissy are in the finals. I felt for a while, actually, like I got way the better end of that bet shortly after making it. I'm now feeling like I'm the underdog even getting those odds in that bet. Although I do still think the door is open for Chrissy just because she was so visible so early on. And to me, that can only mean one of two things. Maybe not one of two, but I think the two most likely things by a mile are either she is in the finals and that is why she was so visible. They've been doing a lot of building up all the finalists, not just the winner, in these most recent seasons, particularly pre-merge. Or, and this will tie into what I say about Ryan as well, I think they want some kind of big downfall, some kind of big blindside for this episode in between the double and the finale. And I my sights, frankly, have been set on Ryan being the one getting set up for that. But I do think it's possible that Chrissy, especially just given now where she is politically, could be the person that is the big boot right before the finale.
But now that Ryan doesn't have the idol anymore, would that even count as like a big get? That's not even a blindside. Not even an epic blindside. It's just
for the audience. I'm saying they want the audience to have some kind of big emotional satisfaction or some big emotional moment.
But does Ryan getting voted out qualifies that anymore? Because it feels like that's just the natural consequence of his alliance fits on him. He doesn't have an idol anymore, and he's probably not going to win a challenge. To be fair to Ryan, so I don't know if that's coming as a shock to anyone.
What I'm saying is, I think both Chrissy and Ryan started out as likable, visible characters. Ryan has been, for me, deteriorating a lot faster in terms of just how I would imagine they think America likes him. And I think the reason for that is they want to set up his downfall as a big event, even if it isn't necessarily. Like, you're right, it makes a ton of sense that of course one of Chrissy or Ryan would be the next one gone. But my hypothesis is, at the beginning of next week's episode, we're going to see one of them get really tanked, and the episode, not drunk, but like get tanked by the edit. And the episode is going to end with that person leaving in a big emotional moment, a big victory for the audience that they finally got this to happen. And I feel like it's more likely to be Ryan than Chrissy, but I don't think it's impossible that it's Chrissy.
Okay. So you're not, what were the odds originally? Like 7-1, you said?
Oh no, I got 2-1 were the odds for Ben, and I got 2-1 on both Ben and Chrissy being in the finals. These days, I think it's probably even a little lower than that, just because Chrissy seems to be on the bottom politically. But I do think her edit makes a pretty compelling case still for why. I don't think it's far. I would probably need 5-2 or 3-1 at this point.
Okay, who you got then for the finals? Because one thing I actually like about the season is I could imagine it being like some combination of like Ben and Chrissy, or Ashley making it in there, which is something we haven't covered but maybe should have done. Or if Devin is still the hot new thing, like Devin could make it to the end. Lauren, we talked about maybe losing in the finals. So what I like is, even though there's no one player who's like standing out far and above the rest, that you have a lot of people who are just kind of floating in the mix who I think could end up with lots of different outcomes. And I know we said that about some of the past few seasons, like Millennials versus Gen X. I think we said this about, definitely did not say this about Game Changers, incidentally.
Well, we said about Millennials versus Gen X, like by this, I think it was the final 7 episode, it was Adam gave a confessional saying, my mom wants me to make it to the end. And then at that point we said, okay, it must be Adam, Hannah, and Ken at the end, but we were wrong about who would win. This one, we were very certain long before the finale, it has to be those three. There's no other way. Whereas here, I think there are tons of different combinations.
Yeah, and then like Game Changers, we were pretty certain that like Aubrey wasn't making it to the end, Sri wasn't making it to the end.
Right.
This time around, I think there genuinely is a lot more doubt about how this is going to play out, which it leads to a less compelling narrative for the season in terms of seeing these storylines converge towards a certain point. But it's like the flip side of that is we get a lot more suspense going into the finale, and maybe Devin's edit over the next few weeks or Ben's edit over the next few weeks will crush down a lot of that suspense. But I could see, you know, I could see a lot of different things happening, and that's all you can really ask for, I guess.
Yeah. For me, I would still be in the camp of, until further notice, both Ben and Devin are in the finals. It feels, based on the last 4 seasons we've seen, like they are the two being set up to be that Jeremy Spencer, Michelle Aubrey, Adam Ken, Sarah Brad pair. Like they, and that's when I made the bet with Ben and Chrissy. I thought it was going to be those two. But I still do think, by the way, to just go back to tie it back to Chrissy, I think it's in the realm of possibility, almost not solely based on her edit, but largely based on her edit, that she is in there as a finalist. I don't know how that happens though. How is Chrissy making it to the end?
Oh, well, what if she is seen as a goat? What if she is, as the prophecy foretold, that person who gets you cast the tie-breaking vote that ends up deciding the entire season?
I think that's very well within the realm of possibility. I just don't know. Is she somehow the one who goes on a challenge run or what? Or she's just not viewed as anyone who has like a real chance at winning? Or I guess that could be the case. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that honestly could be it. Like, she is seen as someone who you know you can beat in the end. Like, I don't know though.
I guess all we need to see is, as soon as the merge hit, the first three exit interviews, the most notable stuff from all of them was the person roasting Chrissy. So I think the people on the island might be getting that same vibe.
Yeah, and if Chrissy is voted out at like final seven or final six or something, and no one remembers her enough to care about that, then why would you put her on blast? Why would everyone unite behind this hatred of Chrissy unless it has some like ultimate payoff in the end?
Yeah. And I guess to wrap on this a little bit, where are you on Ryan? Because as I've said, I'm squaring in on Ryan being the person that I will be surprised if he does not leave at this point. And maybe it's only because I've just talked myself into it over the last couple of days. It's not anything that actually has any logic behind it. It just really feels like Ryan's downfall has been something they've been trying to set up. And it feels like it has to almost be this week, because then there's the finale after that.
Yeah, this seemed like a very abrupt end to his story. And he is the one person who I would be legitimately surprised if they do make it to the finals. And not, it wouldn't like be like completely out of this world or anything, but just, you know, like everyone else, I think, has a much more compelling unresolved storyline than Ryan does now. To me, it's Ryan gets overconfident, he tells too many people, and probably is going to get punished for that on Wednesday night, and then that's going to be it. And there's maybe he's going to have some like Spencer-esque jury speech that's full of like these grotesque analogies. But outside of that, I don't see what role there is left for him to play.
I'm with that. I would say Ryan is pretty, by a pretty wide margin, I think the person least likely to make the finals out of everyone left in this cast. So, Dom, the heist is successful. Extreme Ways drops. Joe has been eliminated. I guess they didn't get the memo that they can't vote Joe out until he finds that third idol.
What's up with that?
I don't know. I'm an idiot. Like this goes back to it for me. Like people complaining about us talking about the edit. How often do I have to be wrong for people to be okay with it? Like I've been wrong for the last like 18 months about the edit.
Well, I don't know if it's worried that you're going to be right and they're going to be spoiled as opposed to just you talking about it incessantly. But I don't know.
All right. Well, Joe does not end up finding that third idol. I still have no idea why they randomly included him saying he was going to find a third idol, but it threw me off.
Maybe this is setting him up like Caleb Reynolds style for he has to come back for a future season so that this can all get wrapped up.
Yeah. Do you think that's possible? Do you think Joe is potentially going to come back?
I think he's definitely in the mix. It's going to be the same way how like 2.5 years ago now we were talking about with Cambodia, like the Jim Rices of the world, right? Like are they in 5 years time, they're going to be so many people in that mold that they just get edged out. But I think Joe for now has enough recency bias that if it's in the next year or two, then he definitely has a good shot.
So I feel like it was for Joe a pretty rough draw just looking, sounding, and playing a lot like Tony Vlachos does, both within the game, obviously, where everyone who knows the show at all or has seen recent seasons is going to be familiar with Tony, and that's going to be the first thing they think of when they look at or talk to Joe or play out there with him. And I also think, as far as the fan community went, not only by virtue of Tony being such a polarizing figure himself within that, but having just such impossible shoes to fill with the people who were Tony fans, I think really put Joe fighting a tremendously uphill battle, the likes of which I can't recall in any kind of recent first time player for what they would have to overcome to be really well received and be regarded as some like really all time great player. Am I being too kind to Joe here? Is Joe part of the problem, Dom?
Part of what problem?
I don't know. The problem that with I feel like some things on social media this season regarding Joe have been a little more charged than they tend to be for other Survivor players.
Elaborate.
I feel like Joe goes really hard on Twitter, and I'm not trying to take all of the blame away from him, but I do feel like he was in a shitty situation, Dom.
Okay, well, so I don't know. I think with Joe, maybe they were trying to recapture the magic of Tony, because like we spoke about the poverty casting archetype that everyone wants to be. I don't know how many people are going out there saying I want to be like Tony when they also like look like Tony and act like Tony, right? He's someone who is quite hard to imitate. So when you have someone who looks like he could fill the same kind of mold as a casting producer, even though you know that, well, these two people are very different, and like Joe obviously has his own personality quirks and gameplay style and so on, I think that's going to draw you to them automatically. And someone like Joe is going to move right to the top of the list.
Okay. And what are your parting thoughts on Joe? Did you feel like he was a fun character to have on this season? Or do we need to move on from the bald, aggressive guy who just goes idol hunting?
Joe kind of made me feel uneasy in a way that I never did with Tony. Like, with Tony, it was always, okay, he's very loud and boisterous, and you can't really figure out what he's doing. But to me, it seemed like just kind of harmless, whereas Joe, it seemed like a nice guy by all accounts, but I don't know, it's very... Do you see what I'm getting at? Like, it's like... No, you don't, but it's fine.
Well, I don't want to put it in terms of like Joe was a disappointment, because he certainly wasn't. I think Joe brought it as a character. But what I was trying to get at is, I feel like Joe, just by virtue of being looking and playing and sounding so much like Tony, had a virtually impossible job here of living up to of making too many people too happy with him being on this season.
I guess I always saw Tony as more like goofy than anything else, whereas Joe, I think, was almost already towards a certain stereotype that I enjoy as much, I suppose.
Okay. Well, there goes Joe. Dom, it looks like things are sailing smoothly along here for this group of four. Next time on Survivor, we see Ben appears to have a really good-looking fake idol here going for himself. We obviously know he has that real idol in his pocket as well. We're shown Devin holding it up like, wow, look at this. Do we think that Ben is snowing Devin with this fake idol, or is he showing Devin, this is what I'm going to use to get one over on the other people?
Or maybe this is why the idol that Chrissy has isn't actually real. Like, although Devin actually knows that, right? Because he was in on the plan. So
yeah.
Ignore that.
Oh, yeah, trust me. live Wednesday night, I live tweeted, oh, this would be a great spot for Ryan and Chrissy to like magically conjure up some really realistic looking idol out of thin air. And then of course I see Josh Wiggler has tweeted at me, and before I even read it, I'm like, oh god, I'm about to get dunked on. And of course Devin already knows about the idol itself.
So scratch that, reverse it. I think I don't know. What I do know, though, is that we see this very brief clip of him saying, oh, it's an immunity necklace. And my biggest pet peeve on Survivor is when people say immunity necklace to refer to the idol and vice versa. I hate it. I absolutely hate it. So when people say, like, oh, I won three idols, it's like, no, you didn't. You won three. You won immunity however many times. You maybe, if you want to take liberties with it, you won the necklace however many times, you didn't win an idol. And likewise, you didn't find a necklace, you found an idol. Sorry, it just drives me fucking berserk, and I don't know why.
Okay,
it's so irrelevant.
Okay, dumb.
But yeah,
this is exactly how I feel about the fact that they call it tribal instead of calling it council. If we're shortening tribal is a fucking adjective. Council is where we're going to the council. I understand this doesn't matter. This is fucking senseless.
I think I have more people behind me on this one than John Rocker, so at least I have that going for me.
It's kind of, I understand this gripe as well. People who don't like it when the rites of passage are confused with, they call it fallen comrades, which is the name of the old challenge that where people would answer trivia about the people that were voted out before them. When people call the rites of passage, where they walk past everyone's torch, they would often call that fallen comrades, and it would very much irritate a lot of purists.
There was some viral Twitter thread a few days ago that everyone was quoting and responding to about what is the most insignificant hill you're willing to die on, and for me, this is it. This is the issue of which I will stand my ground. I will take no disagreement on this one.
You're right. The good news for you, Dom, I'm with you. So I don't know if that's good news or bad news, but I think you're right on that one for sure. Dom, anything else besides not forgetting to plug where people can find us that we want to get to before we dive a little further into the edit?
No, I'm good.
Eventually, we'll be able to just know that we should just be plugging and not have to go peel back the curtain every single time we do that. But anyway, Dom is on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. We are going to dive a little deeper into the edit discussion for this week. But if you want to tune out, now would be the time. Thank you so much for tuning in the first place. I'm sure we'll be back very soon. And Dom, let's send it over to the edit zone. You are listening to the Dom and Colin Edit Zone.
Mike Holloway.
Michelle Ken. Brad Culpepper. You are listening to the Dom and Colin Edit Zone.
Tune out now.
All right, so here we are back in the edit zone, Dominic. And of course, I think the place we need to dive in is the latest update on where we are on Ben or Devin. And I'm really interested to get into this now that we're in the real no holds barred territory. I know I came in here last week higher on Devin than on Ben, and it sounds to me like you're coming in here this week feeling like Devin had a really big week.
Yeah, I'm surprised that other people don't seem to feel the same way. I guess...
Well, I mean that because Ben was your boy. As I was trying to sell you Devin last week, you were not having any of it. When it seemed like everyone in the world was finally saying, oh, Devin is definitely a major contender, you were the one person that, to me at least, was just completely writing him off.
Yeah, and I think this was a good episode for Ben, so I don't know how suddenly that's been flipped around in my estimation. But yeah, I guess my opening question would be, what would a good episode have looked like for Devin in your mind?
I thought Devin looked quite villainous to me this episode. I really felt like there were a lot of evil grins left in there and a lot of overconfident confessionals. For instance, Devin says Lauren is really good, she's like as good as me, and I'm happy to have her on her side, and I think this plan is it to have her on my side, and I think this plan is gonna work. I didn't know do you think the as good as me, it was a spot where they could easily have cut out him saying as good as me. He could have just said, I think Lauren's great and I love having her on my team. They easily could have left that out.
As good as me with that musical twang in the background as soon as he said that, right?
That
didn't go down well with me, but I wasn't sure. Again, this is like the mirror image of what I'm saying about Ben, whereas I see everything that Ben does and I think that seems a bit sketchy, but I understand on some level that that's meant to be a positive edit. And I feel like the inverse of that is going on with Devin, where I see all this stuff and everyone else is saying, oh, it's really villainous, and I think, well, that seems perfectly fine to me. But I see what you're saying. I understand what the argument is.
Okay.
I just didn't expect it to be coming from you after last week.
It's because I thought Ben had a big week, which we've gotten to a bit already, but I can get into more a little later. It was mostly just the family stuff looked so good, and then the whole thing being framed in terms of, for just quickly on Ben, I guess, because I think Devin is the bigger talking point this week. The whole thing being framed as Ben's mission and getting to put it in those terms constantly throughout both episodes, and then ending in hashtag mission complete when Joe gets eliminated and Ben's fist pumping at that second tribal council. I think that's quite worth noting that they pop up not hashtag blindside, they pop up hashtag mission complete for obviously something pertaining only to Ben. But to go back to Devin quickly, just the one other thing for him looking really arrogant was he also said, I don't think anyone knows I'm as good as I am, so I'm sitting in the best possible seat in this game. There was also, I think, one other spot, I don't know if I have it written down, where he said something like, you know, everything's going to plan, I have this all figured out. When we get that from someone who goes on to win, it's like Boston Rob or something like that, where like they're obvious, like Derek Lavasser, or something. I guess that's Big Brother and that's not a winner edit per se. It is never anyone, honestly, what I'm getting at is it's rarely anyone short of that. It's rarely anyone like the Devin type. Like you couldn't even imagine, I don't know, Tony, I don't think, was Tony ever saying, I'm controlling the whole show? I feel like Tony was saying, I'm nervous half the time. I'm paranoid.
Yeah, Tony was constantly frantic and frenetic and never stopped moving. Devin never started moving until last week, at which point everyone decided he was the anointed victor and nothing could dislodge that. Until apparently this week, where I don't know what happened. But I guess then, would Devin's episode this week be conducive, if you like, to a winning edit if what he had previously was more fleshed out or if it was a different kind of content?
So if he had been coming in from the beginning saying, hey, I'm Devin, I'm the secret villain mastermind, and all these people are going to be my puppets, then I think this would be in play.
Or even if he just had a fairly normal, not necessarily low-key edit, but just he was there at various points, as opposed to being there when he was relevant and dropping off in between. Well, what I'm getting at is I feel like I see where you're coming from with saying this doesn't really mesh with what we've seen so far if Devin would go on to win. But I feel like you could make those same criticisms last week. Like if Devin is going to be a breakout character, he's going to break out in this sort of way, I feel. And so given that, I come back to that question of, like, if you were expecting Devin to win this time last week, what would this episode have needed to look like?
I think he would have had to look like, I really feel like he got a lot of the setup of, okay, this is how we're going to get one over on everyone else. And isn't it so funny how in control we are, versus Ben, who was presented as, this is my mission and I'm doing it for my family. And over the course of the episode, he does a really good job on the mission. And then it culminates again in hashtag mission complete. I really do feel like we would have seen a different side of how Devin was involved in the plan, other than like the guy happy about getting one over. It really did seem like Devin was, I framed it earlier as like Devin really stepping into the like mastermind role, but I really did almost mean that with like a negative connotation attached to it.
Yeah. So I know there are some people who are still on the Devin train. One of them is Damien, who has continued his ongoing email correspondence with us, or with you, I should say, because he starts his email by saying, not that Dom cares since he never reads emails. Wrong. Incorrect. Not a good way to start your email add-on, but that's fine. We can move past that. sees a lot of this stuff in a different light, and he argues, for instance, that Devin's quote that Lauren is as good as me, he says, at first he thought it was a bad sign, but rewatching it felt like that was echoing the audience's reaction of, wait, hold on, who is this guy? Well, firstly, who is this guy, but also who is he to be saying that kind of thing? But it makes sense given that Devin has been hidden for so long that like your reaction to that is meant to be more confusion rather than, oh, this guy's such a douchebag, right? And like in retrospect, if Devin does go on to become this mastermind who wins the game, then you're going to look back and think, oh, okay, he was hiding in the shadows the whole time and he was probably doing that intentionally, rather than this guy has disappeared too far up his own backside.
Okay, so what the argument is this is, you know, they're almost telling the story of how he was able to get away with staying under the radar so long by keeping him low profile and just kind of there when he needs to be, doing a good job when he needs to be, but not putting his name on anyone's radar anytime early.
That seems to be the gist of it. Also, he points out, I think what we've alluded to is that if you take away some of that arrogance, this episode is a classic winner's episode for Devin. This is the kind of thing which this late in the season you would be hoping and expecting to see from someone who was at the top of your leaderboard. And then finally, he notes something which I'm surprised we didn't, because we used to start every single episode by pointing out, so this week in the previously on Survivor segment, and it feels like we never do that anymore. Maybe we can revisit that someday. But this week, what we had was that quote of Chrissy saying to Ben, people are starting to feel like you're steamrolling them, and Ben saying, no, they're not. That was played again. And I wonder if this is going to be like the... There was that clip of Ian in BB14 where it's like just this one innocuous quote from some conversation was replayed in like five consecutive previously on segments. And I wonder if this is going to start to be the same thing with this, which obviously doesn't reflect well on Ben. If this is the one thing you're meant to be reminded of every single week.
Yeah. But no, that's a good point.
Right. And like, why revisit that necessarily? Especially as Ben did not become a target in this episode. That the whole punchline to the joke was that Ben was undercover and was still in control, despite it seemed like he was not in control, and he himself was never the target. So why come back to this if it doesn't tie into what the rest of the episode is pushing?
Well, surely if you're trying to bury Ben, you have much more effective ways of doing so than just a random clip in the previously on Survivor. And then the rest of the episode, I feel, makes him look really good.
Right. And yeah, the counter argument is when the rest of the episode is saying Ben is this war veteran hero who loves his wife and he's just an amazing person in every single way. You need some way to balance that out so that when he does get to the end, there's a little sliver of doubt in people's minds, right?
Yeah. And to quickly address it, the reason that I didn't, and you're right that we haven't done it more recently, the previously on Survivor, but it's because this week, at least on when I was rewatching the episode to get some notes down, my big takeaway from the previously on Survivor was I noticed that, and I had noticed this before, but CBS is impeccable at starting at precisely 8 o'clock when my DVR picks up. Like when I press play on it, it's from my DVR and it just fades right in every single week to previously on Survivor. There's no commercials. There's no end of Jeopardy or whatever else, which is definitely not the case for most other channels. It's as if I'm watching it like on demand. It's incredible. So big props to CBS for that, as someone who highly values punctuality as it pertains to everyone but Dom. Where were we going? Where are we on the Devin? What do you want to say about it? Because I really do just feel like for what I'm down to for me is Devin. The reason I'm so much higher on Ben than Devin this week is just because of the way they were portrayed on either end of this heist. Like actually, shout out to the show Leverage, one of the great underrated shows. That I think it's still out there on Netflix, and hopefully it is because it's fantastic. And the way that show worked is it was a heist crew, and each of them had like their own kind of specialty. And it seemed to me like Devin was like almost the brains here, and Ben was the muscle, and they made the brains look like the evil guy, and the muscle look like the hero of the group.
Yeah, I will be sure to check out the first 15 minutes of that show's premiere before.
You would love it. You would legit love it.
Okay, I'll actually put it on the list then. But I think I agree. So for me, it's almost like we pick up in midstream with Devin, where he goes from not really being there, and when he is there, just being like this relaxed guy who doesn't really know what he's doing, and having to make these decisions is so tough. To suddenly he's in boss and rob mode, right? And there's no kind of continuity between the two, so that's a little bit jarring. And then also when this plan is put in place, we hear what the plan is, and we see Devin saying, okay, this is a plan, and we get a brief explanation of why, but it's never placed in the context of Devin's overall game, right? It's never, we have to do this so that it's going to take the heat off me, or so that I can get this information from Ben. It's just, this is what the reason is. But we hear from Ben about what he's doing and why it's working so well, and what his perspective is on that from the inside. And I feel like that's a much, even when that perspective might be contradicted at times, or when you disagree with it, or it seems like it's in doubt, to me, that's a much bigger sign of, we are meant to not root for this person necessarily, but like, care about their fate in the game than Devin. Like if Devin somehow gets blindsided next week, that's just a survivor blindside, or an epic blindside, or whatever adjective they use. If Ben gets blindsided, that's the entire story like collapsing in on itself.
Right. Yeah, that ties me. Okay, three things. For number one, unrelated to the next two, Leverage has the official Antonio Mazzaro seal of approval. So that's don't take it from me. Take it from Antonio.
So does The Wire. So enough said.
Okay. If Dom, so this is good. This is a free roll. Even if Dom comes back and says Leverage is awful, he also hates The Wire. So still listen to me. Number two, Steven was saying on, I don't know why I keep going back to what, it's hard to talk about strategy when you've listened to what they've said on Know-It-Alls without feeling like, without bringing the same things up, without feeling I'm ripping them off. So Steven was talking about how Devin may be just the final hurdle for Ben, which I think ties into what you're saying, where we would understand why Devin would get voted out down the line. Whereas if it's Ben, potentially that's a lot more of the story that's gone. Whereas Devin would, like, it would be a surprise, but we would get, you know, okay, this big character became a mega power player by the end game. And of course they had to take him out. He was becoming the next Boston Rob, whatever. My question is, And this ties into the third thing, which is last week I came in after having been on Ben all season saying, I still think Ben is certainly alive. And I think the two of them combined have like 80% equity. I was just slightly higher on Devin. Okay. I'm now back to being high. Go back and listen. Please feel free. Not you, but the listeners. Or you can too if you want. It's not going to happen, but you could theoretically. I'm now going back much higher on Ben. I would say give me Ben. I would say it's like 60% Ben, 30% Devin, 10% the field. But I'm wondering where you fall on the Devin being Ben's kind of final hurdle theory, and if you think that means he's going to be voted out, or if you think that means Ben's going to beat him in the finals.
I'm torn on that, and I think I agree with what I think is the premise there, that the season is going to come down to some clash between the two of them, and whether that's Devin gets Ben voted out next week and it goes on to be a coronation, then that's fine. Or if it's Devin overreaches himself, or like Ben sniffs out the plan or something, or even if it's they face off in the final immunity to see who gets the spot in the finals where they're going to win, or if it's Ben beats Devin in the finals, all of these different outcomes, I think, are guided by the same idea that these are now the two major players, and it this season is going to come down to a clash between the two of them. And I think Ben is going to come out on top, but I don't know how, and I don't want to hazard a guess as to which.
So this is what I'm still, I guess, what I'm, just for you in particular, I'm still trying to figure out, how did this week swing you and last week didn't? Last week you were not at all in on Devin after what I thought was like by far his best episode of the season. And then I thought this was an actively bad episode for him, and you come in and you're like, okay, fine, maybe Devin wins.
But because Devin was the big player of the episode, and he was, I mean, his plan was shown to work. And for all of my talk about how arrogant he came across as, or the boasting or whatever, it wasn't contradicted by the episode, right? Like, it's everything Devin said came true. And maybe this is set up for when it doesn't come true, or it all comes tumbling down in future weeks. But for now, it's, yeah, it seemed like Devin knew what he was doing and he did it. And that's, what more can you really want?
Okay. Well, I'm going to say 60% Ben, 30% Devin, 10% field. Where are you on that? Like, what is the ratio, you think? How surprised would you be if it was Devin instead of Ben? That's a valid. Don't
no,
eye
no, no,
roll.
No, no.
Always eye roll. Okay.
No, I'm not. This is me. I'm pensive. I'm lost.
Okay.
In thought.
Okay. Okay. You didn't look pensive. You looked mad at me. Sorry for misreading that.
This is irrelevant to the viewers who can't see me, because that's how the medium works. But I would say, like, maybe like Ben 50%, Devin 40%, and then Phil 10%. Now see, you're, come on.
Okay, now I'm going away, because now Ben is my boy. This time last week, you were the one person who could not be convinced that Ben would lose, and now you're saying it's basically a toss a coin.
Yeah, well, I swung too far in the other direction, but you have reined me in. Your brilliant arguments have convinced me to toe the line.
That actually happens. I swear that happens to me sometimes, where like I disagree with you, but then you make really good points about it and I come around. And then over time, I become more of a champion for that cause than you even were to begin with. So I guess I'll take one coming back my direction there. Dom, I'm going to give another fire take here. About Lauren. I know the Sandra one people still may be recovering from. I'm going to say that 10% that I'm giving to the field might be almost entirely Lauren at this point. What has Lauren done? What have we seen from Lauren that isn't great stuff?
So you think like Chrissy is officially drawing dead?
I think it's close. I don't think this is even a that bad of an episode for Chrissy necessarily, like the second half. But yeah, I have a hard time seeing Chrissy winning now at this point. I don't think Lauren, I'm going to elevate her certainly away. I've had her drawing dead all season long. Welcome to episode 11. Lauren, you're on the board for me.
I guarantee you, if the unspoiled edit site still exists, and I don't even know if it does, so someone let me know if it's still floating out there somewhere. I guarantee you, there is that one guy who, for the past 20 seasons, always has to be the contrarian and picks some like random, under-edited person in the cast and says, oh, clearly they're going to win. And I guarantee you that this season, that person is all in on Ashley. And they have some master theory for how Ashley's edit is somehow being overlooked and ignored this whole time. It's not true. Don't read anything into it. I think Ashley is off the board. But if that person is wrong, that would be kind of cool. Right, not even taking sides on Ashley, but if we are once again so sidetracked by this, oh, it's either A, no, Ashley is B, and then like F comes out of left field and just takes it somehow. I don't know, that would be kind of cool for once.
Let me weave this into something. I'm going to be doing the power rankings that I think come out Monday with Matt Liguori over on robhasawebsite.com. This week, which I'm looking forward to. I think I'm going to have Ben at number one, but Dom might talk me into it between now and then to go back to Devin, I suppose. But Matt, the reason I bring it up is because during the great Aubrey and Michelle debacle of season 32, Matt Liguori was over there championing Team Sydney the entire way. That always did it like down to the finale. He was like, no, it's going to be Sydney.
Or like our good friend Charles Kurz last season, it's like from the first episode, it's okay, guys, Saria's going to win 100%. There's no doubt in my mind Saria's going to win. And he was just the one person banging that drum in the background the whole time. And it was like, Charles, I like that you're saying this because I like entertaining the idea, but it's not going to happen. Can we please acknowledge that finally?
Listen, I made $80 on finale night during last season because Charles and Glenn Oak were both willing to bet me $40 that Ceree would win against the field. It was unbelievable. It was crazy. But yeah, no, there's always someone out there like that. In on Lauren. Let's stick on Ashley for a second, though, actually, because Ashley, I think, could be creeping up here as that possible other person in the finals. Do you feel like she could actually get some votes, though? Because I've just been taking it for granted that whoever that person is not going to get any votes. I actually don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they do. It's not consistent with the tie, but but I don't think it's crazy.
I could see her getting a vote or two, maybe. Well, it's weird because we've never had the third place finalist other than China, right? Even then it was what was it? Oh God, what was the final vote?
Okay,
China?
So I do know this piece of trivia. So China, they all got a vote. Also, Worlds Apart, they all got a vote.
Yeah,
and did they all get a vote in San Juan del Sur?
They had love for the jury. So. Yeah. But what I was saying was, it's never been the case that a third place finalist has got more than one vote. That seems to be the cap. So I think if one vote is pushing it, then two is, that's a hot take saying that Ashley could get two votes, I think.
Okay. I just meant more than zero, but right. I also, now I'm wondering, what is the scenario if it goes 3-3-2? Do we then have the two odd ones out re-vote between the two finalists that got more, and then if those two are split, then the third person goes? Or is it just automatic third finalist now is the new juror? I framed that poorly, but do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, so what you're saying is, it being a tie...
Is there a revote at Final Tribal Council? What I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm saying it being a tie could be consistent with third place finalist randomly spikes two votes somehow, or however many votes, and then, yeah, okay.
Yeah, but I don't know if they would revote and have... Because I don't know if they would want it to. What I'm saying is, I think if it came back 3-3-2, they might have the two. They might say, you got to go vote between these other two. Just for the
in
TV
the
product, they would want it to. Yeah, they would tell them at Final Tribal Council, we need you to vote between the other two. And then if those come back split, they would go into tiebreaker. I don't think they would want.
Hold on. What's your working theory on if it is a tie, when it gets broken? Is it at Final Tribal or is it live at the reunion?
Oh, no. Okay. As I said, the first time you brought this question up, when we brought up this issue preseason, I believe, there is absolutely no way they will walk out of Final Tribal Council without the winner being decided. There is a hard 0.0% chance that they're going to wait for anything for the. It's not going to be like there's no way that they're going to wait that long. They will definitely be decided before anyone leaves the set that night. But I'm taking too long to get to this, but I do think there are several interesting scenarios where various different people could somehow be breaking the tie if it goes 3-3-2 and they need to re-vote, or if that goes straight to the third finalist, or what if there even is a tie. I hope there's not a tie at this point, and that we and every other like Survivor commenter has wasted collective like hundreds upon hundreds of hours about talking about a tie that never happened.
Yeah, so if they successfully lead us down that rabbit hole and it amounts to absolutely nothing, there is no telling what they can do in future seasons just to mess with us, just to mess with the people who torment them by commenting on their editorial and production decisions every single week. If I was them, I would be doing that. I would be actively seeking out ways to mess with the commentariat who tries to make my life a misery.
Yeah. Okay. So any other edit takes that you want to be getting out there?
Not this week. Check back in a few days.
All right, yeah, I guess give us some time to just stew on each other's arguments, and then we'll come back here next week talking about how the other one was all wrong. All right, I fucked that up, but all right. Okay, sorry.
They get it. It's all good.
No, I'm going to read. Okay. Yeah, give us a... Okay, quiet. Quiet.
I love that every time you get the cough in there just on cue, as if it's not a physical reaction. It's just like a verbal tick that you've got to cycle in.
Okay. Yeah, give us a couple days and I'm sure we'll talk ourselves into changing our own minds to the total opposite side before we come back here and talk about next week. Okay, until then, you can, of course, still be following Dom on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. If you, like Damien, would be so interested in emailing us, domandcolin@gmail.com. Anything else, Dom, before we take off?
No, let's get out of here.
All right. That'll do it. Take care, everybody. Enjoy the... It's not the finale. There's still one more to go before the finale. Enjoy the penultimate episode. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
All right, cool. That went well, I think.
Yeah.